These poems are selected from the Birdpath Collected Longer Poems. Scotia Deserta. All those kyles, lochs and sounds, and the gulls at Largs Pier, sitting in that cafe at the big window full of wind and light, reading and watching, thinking back to the ice, watching it move from the high middle spine out into the Atlantic, feeling it gouge out lochs and sculpt craggy pinnacles and smooth long beaches. The land emerges, bruised and dazed in the Arctic light. Gannets gather in the islands, eagles on the piney hills, cotton grass tosses in the wind. Men come gazing around them. What name shall be given it? Alba. White beach meditations, mountain contemplations, imprinted on the mind. One left traces of his presence out there in Bute and the Gavelach Isles and Kilbrannan Sound, the holy voyager Brandon. Brandon was maybe a believer, but that's neither here nor there. First and foremost, he was a navigator, a figure moving mile by mile along the headlands among the islands, tracing a way between foam and cloud with an eye to outlines. Sound of Islay, the Firth of Lorne, Tyree Passage, the Sound of Mull, Skerryvore and Barra Head, Loch Alch, Kyle Rhea, Sound of Rassi. Ah, the clear sounding words, and the world opening, opening. Other figures crossed the scene, like this one. Kentigern, they cried him. And the church I attended around the age of 9 was that stained glass window showing a man with a book in his hand standing on a seashore preaching to the gulls. I'd be gazing at the window and forgetting the sermon all about good and evil with a lot of mangled metaphor and heavy comparison, eager to get back out onto the naked shore, there to walk for hours on end with a book sometimes in my hand, but never a thought of preaching in my mind. Trying to grasp at something that wanted no godly name, something that took the form of blue waves and grey rock and that tasted of salt. A rocky walk and the smell of kelp between Fairly and Largs. Drifting smoke, the glint of autumn leaves on Loch Lomond side. Ghostly gulls in the greyness. Kia, 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 kia. September at Applecross. Tyree on a March morning, the kingdom of the wind. Seven islands in the August sunlight. Islay, Jura, Scarba, Lunga, Luing, Shuna, Seal. Walking the coast, all those kyles, lochs and sounds. Sensing the openness, feeling out the lines, order and anarchy, chaos and cosmology, a mental geography. Have you heard Corrybrecon at the spring flood on the westerly blowing? The roaring so great you can hear it 20 miles along the mainland coast. Admiralty charts show a 9-knot raise. To the senses that do no calculations but take it all in, it's a rushing white flurry, birthplace of a wave and wind philosophy. Let the images go bright and fast, and the concepts be extravagant, wild host, erratic guest. That's the only way to see the coast, all the irregular reality of the rocky sea-washed west. Pelagian discourse, Atlantic poetics, from first to last. Early morning light on Loch Sunat. While I write this, a grey heron is standing motionless in the early morning light of Loch Sunat. At the centre of a ring of silence, a grey heron, only the waters rippling, language dare not be loud this morning. For still words, long fallen silent, Listen, if you will, to these. Yefchi bratan firushki an, ajira rishkach stra, yon an cleave gol yenver. A grey heron, watching, listening, in an early morning glitter of waters, maybe dreaming. Fishing in nothingness, that is one way of putting it. Here on Loch Sunert, bright falling of the year, quiet, so quiet. Letter from Harris. The degree of isolation is higher here than in most places. The ancient foreland has continued in the islands of the Outer Hebrides, which mainly consist of Louisian gneiss, a metamorphic rock over 200 million years old. These islands stretch for a distance of some 150 miles along the west coast of Scotland and are exposed to the full force of the Atlantic waves and weather. Rodel, where the young men built the beautiful ship that the sea coveted, and the great cleric lived who founded the grammar school in Paris. Rodel this evening is an empty harbour, a rusty iron ring, and a heap of red seaweed. I asked the old woman if she liked it here. She answered, I'm here whether I like it or not. And asked about the life, she said, £1.50 a score of herring, £40 a ton of coal, 14p a loaf of bread. I open the book and the words fly out of the page. Ferlian, Ian Levara, Boak, Brech and Chil. As I listen to them talking, the remaining ones, I hear the phrases twining and intertwining like carving in a stony crypt or like the glorified lines of a precious manuscript. But when I walk alone the rocks or the Macher, the silence itself is illuminant. And I do not think of culture or even of subsistence. The question in my mind is of going outward, always further outward, to the farthest line of light. Phone reboot, Mr. Nicholson, Grimsey, 082380, Miller Monday, 2 Florida Bay, 83234. Callum Ian McCorkadale might be able to take you, but I cannot give you his phone number. I believe he has the phone now, but his number is not yet in the book. Anyway, you go and see him, and if he's going out, he'll take you. Or if he's not going out, too bad. Ronald MacDonald of Powell's Garry, Angus Cunningham, the Sapphire. The thousand shimmerings. This morning, the sea of the monks is a thousand shimmerings. We think of those northern islands as storm-bound and mist-wrapped, yet nowhere can there be greater brilliance of colour. The sea so blue, the rocks so vivid with saffron lichen. A meadow of sea pink in June contains all colours between white and deep purple, and the white feathered birds reflect the boreal intensity of the summer light. Medusae on the white sand beach, colour of brandy and whiskey, are again infinitely pale, like the first clutch of living jelly in a Darwinian dawn. The disciple sits for long hours silent and motionless, till he enters a state of impassivity free of all thoughts. Finally departing from the self, he penetrates the domain of emptiness. A guillemot, reflected in the glassy water, shatters its image. In the room of roaring waves. Crow meditation text. Everybody knows the sad, sweet tale of the nightingale. But when crow starts croaking hard and hoarse, that's something else. Crow, I tell you, is one queer jewel. Crow is a ghost, he's a bird with a past. Crow is king of his own mad world in which he's always croaking. Usually nobody listens to Crow. But when one of your friends takes off for the Icelands and writes back in a letter about a weird crow encounter somewhere in the snowfields, and when a few days later, as you come through the door of a Montparnasse apartment, the first thing you set eyes on is a huge lump of a crow whose croaking days are over but looks as if it knew a thing or two, you begin to wonder. You find yourself asking what there is to crow. Why does crow crow? Where does crow go? What does crow know? Crow, first of all, is polyglottal. Crow talks double Dutch with a mixture of Eskimo, Ruski, Nahuatl, Sanskrit, Chinese, Snohomish, as well as several brands of English. Crow has been around. Edgar Allan Poe was a crow. The anthropologist Enyer Bado turned into a crow. I suppose all the crows were crows. I once thought of founding an academy of gulls based on an ancient Chinese model with one aim in view. Say the world anew, dawn talk, grammar of rain, tree, stone, blood and bone. I can conceive of black gulls and white crows. No race fiends need apply. I mean, crow could also be of the gull academy, the croaking member. But that plan went with the wind, and I ended up with broken wings on a cold island, smoking the weeds of my mind. Anyway, the fact is, birdmen are still going around, thinking a feather dream, croaking, yelling, squawking, all relative heavyweights, which is to say, no warbling or chirping. It's a tough world, and you have to be able to go it through blizzards. Ka, ka, ya, ya, ka, krr, krak, krak, kree, kree, kree. Drink cold water. Feed on stones and bones. Keep cool and fit, far out on your own. Engaged in long-distance communication. Why does crow crow? Where does crow go? What does crow know? Ask hawk, hovering up there in silence. Ask the snowy owl. Ask the great skua and the rosy gull. All birds talk, don't talk, in different lingos.
Hölderlin in Bordeaux. Not overgiven to conversation. When opinions began trotting off the tongues, he tended to go away for a walk along the river. Why be a poet in such wretched times? I do what I can as well as I can. It all belongs to the work in hand. That was in the red days of autumn, with the grapes ripened on the Garonne hills and the memory of friends who had left on ship from the windy promontory. Back in Germany, did nothing for him. But he would go back. Back. Back to what? Some window overlooking a forest, maybe. A little philosophical light. Every day, boats left the harbor for the Indies, the Americas. He paced the quays and watched them leaving, his journey lying in another direction. But how far would he be able to go when everything was overgrown with habit and with triviality and mere opinion? One may think of Greece, translate the tragedies, indulge in that archaic hyperbole, dream the ideal. The landscape had changed, utterly changed. He'd felt it crossing Auvergne that awful night, losing his way in the ice and snow. He'd felt it. The landscape had changed. Colder, craggier, more massive. Poetry itself would have to change. No gods to sing to in a sun-filled theater, and nothingness to face in an open expanse. Walking the streets of Bordeaux in the red days of September, watching how the shadows moved slowly with the sun, seeing at some high window a beautiful face that was there, then gone. He would have to learn how to travel alone.
Remembering Gogunel. Abandoned house, abandoned soil. Walls tangled in thorns and vines. Who'd waste energy on land like this? Could work it years and no return, but here's a stranger, God knows why, pitching in to clear the rubble and ruck, sweat trickling down his brow and back. Old mulberries that still bear leaves, the summer on their last legs, gutted out and all out of shape, hanging on crazily to the sunburned slope. Bees nesting in them, honey gathers, leave them where they are then, even their eggs. They're still in touch with spinning girls. Hacking out a path among the wind, metal of mattock sparking rock, hot flies buzzing around my sweat, blue mist far away down the valley, sun throbbing fiercely in empty sky. A hawk circles quietly over the wood, snake slithers into matted grass. Goat's cheese from the neighboring stead, and apricots fresh from this morning's tree, with rose-colored wine from a Trappist cell. I lie still here among thorn and bramble, cool in the shadow at my midday meal, watching blue smoke rising from the western hill and white clouds sailing over Thunder Mountain. The smith has wrought me a handy axe, just the length I need for swinging, now up in a dark wood cutting rafters, clean axe head neatly lopping branches, then piling together tumbled stones. We'll have to learn how to build up walls, make a good job of that old tower. Work over, down to the hillside stream, clear water splashing by the little fall, wash myself enjoying the water's feel, seeing the dragonflies skimming the pool, dark blue winged in the evening glow, and butterflies like fluttering petals, all the colors of the rainbow. Long hours at night beside the lamp, studying the 10 books gathered here, stars clustered thick at the little window, wind soughing coolly in the chestnut wood, a rat scuttles overhead in search of grain, my eyes settle down in the page again, that bird cry is the early dawn.
Reading Han Shan in the Pyrenees. The disciples of Buddha called him poet-monk. Those of Lao Tzu called him hermit and mystic. And the Confucianists said he was a crazy eccentric who sometimes talked sense. For himself, he was just cold mountain, doing his best, never knowing exactly where it was leading him. Du Guangting, 859-33, in his Shanxiang Shiyi, says Han Shan lived on Mount Kuiping in the Chantai Mountains. For the Taoists, the Chantai Range was one of those places where men grow wings. Every now and then he'd go down to the Guqing Monastery to get food from the kitchen, but mostly was up there among the white clouds. Hadn't always been there, though. Talks of Red Sparrow Street in Chang'an, where he must have raised the dust. Memories of sweet little girls, young girls playing in the twilight. The breeze blows their perfume over the road before making for the heights. An unorthodox character, outside the classifications. He'd do a little zazen when it suited him, but made fun of the straight backs and shaven pates in general. Tao Buddhist, okay. But let's just say mountain poet and get into the poems. All 311 of them. A certain smart aleck by the name of Wang said my poems were all wrong and that I had no sense of prosody. They make me laugh with their correct poetry. It's just blind men singing about the sun. Let me find one man with clear eyes, said Han Shan, and my poems will go around the world. I sauntered off to see a great monk, misty mountain, mile after mile. The old fellow showed me the way back home, the round lamp of the moon. Strolling about and hoarding mountain, sky clear, marvelous day. and the moon's bright and all white, you can forget about east and west. Those cold mountain poems are like a day with two dawns.